Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Breaking news today, Mara. Courtney Hope, who has just wrapped a stint on Bold and Beautiful as Sally, has been snapped up to their sister show, Young and the Restless. So Courtney announced her new gig on social media, and I am so excited to see who she'll be playing and what she'll be doing in Genoa City. I mean, she is so talented, and I know we were really disappointed to see her leave B&B so soon. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a great piece of casting.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I definitely think she exited B&B as a hot commodity, and I'm somewhat surprised that it happened so fast, but not at all surprised that another show did jump at the opportunity to bring her aboard. And she's in an age range that would make her peers with like such a wide swath of Genoa City. So I'm intrigued to find out who she'll be working with and where she's going to fit into the canvas. But, you know, as we've said before on the podcast, she really brings a distinct spark to the screen. So kudos to YNR for recognizing that.
Yeah, and I think it's in the similar vein as Michelle Stafford. So it'd be kind of cool if we saw any connection to Phyllis. Mm. And, you know, I had heard that YNR was generally not looking for soap names, if you will, to like, you know, cast for roles on the show, and like preferred to find new faces like they have with Donnie Boaz or Mark Grossman. But this is really a case where you have a super talented actress who is familiar to soap fans, and it's a welcome transition between the two shows.
Yeah, and there's a long list of people who've been successful on both of those two shows, some playing the same character, like Kimberlyn Brown did most famously as Sheila, and some playing an entirely new face. That's a list that includes some of B&B's earliest talent, like John McCook and Darlene Conley, both of whom were on YNR. And then more recently, you know, YNR stars Heather Tom and Don Diamont and Matthew Atkinson, all of whom transitioned to B&B. And now the talent pool is flowing in the other direction, if you will, and I'm excited about it.
Me too. Now, it also seems like every week there is some Days casting news to talk about. This week is no different. It's about the future of the Hernandez family in Salem. So we're going to see A. Martinez return as Eduardo next week, and he is going to usher Gabby and Rafe out of town. So Galen Gehring had announced his departure, if you will recall, way back in like late January. And Camila Bannis never clarified her status, but eventually, you know, word got out that she was leaving too. However, in quite the reversal of fortune, both actors will be back when the show starts filming again next month. So we'll see them like sometime in October or November. And as for A, he says he was really happy to come back and reconnect with his on-screen kids. He felt the character of Eduardo had a lot of potential, especially with Lauren Coslow's Kate. So, you know, perhaps we'll see more of him down the line now that Camila and Galen are back.
I think there are a lot of Days fans with all of the casting changes going on in Salem who were really relieved to hear that Galen and Camila are staying put. Mm-hmm. You know, especially since Brandon Barash is really still in the early stages of his run as Jake, and the chemistry between him and Camila is so strong. Mm-hmm. We also report in the new issue that A. Martinez's former Santa Barbara co-star, Carrington Garland, who played Kelly Capwell, the sister-in-law of Martinez's Cruz, is joining the cast of The Bay. Now, I was a huge fan of Carrington's on Santa Barbara, and I got to speak with her this week. And she told me it was actually A who proposed her for the role she'll be playing,
wow,
also named Kelly. And A reached out to her about it which I loved hearing. Carrington hasn't been acting in many years. She went down like a totally different career path. So she said this came completely out of the blue for her, but she thought, sounds fun, why not? And she will make her debut on The Bay in September.
That's awesome. Now the Nurses Ball is underway on General Hospital. And, you know, I really applaud them for still pulling it together despite the production limitations and that it was, you know, like a post-shutdown taping. And I love the t-shirts. In the new issue, though, you have a big old preview about General Hospital. You spoke to not only the show's executive producer, Frank Valentini, but the head writers, Chris Van Etten and Dan O'Connor. And I feel like every GH fan will want to read your interviews for sure.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I actually got emotional hearing their voices again, because particularly with Chris and Dan, I'm accustomed to talking to them for storyline previews like every other week. And it was such a thrill for the GH-starved viewer in me to hear about what's coming up, which includes some tough times ahead for Sonny as he struggles to do right by Mike, who is in the end stages of his Alzheimer's, a truly life-changing confrontation between Carly and Nell, and a dangerous figure from the past threatening the family unit that Anna has been enjoying both with Peter and with Finn. Now, speaking of Anna, her portrayer, Finola Hughes, recently dropped a really fun and intriguing new series called Enter Exit on IGTV, which is Instagram's video channel. You can just go to her Instagram page to find it. It's a thriller she directed and stars in with our guest today, Ian Buchanan, her former leading man on GH as Duke, who has a dizzying list of soap credits to call his own.
He does indeed, and I want to try to get to talk about all of them. So let's check in with Ian and see what he's been up to. Hi, Ian.
Hi. Thank you for interrupting me in my isolation or my my quarantine or my lockdown. I definitely could use the distraction.
Us too.
Well, first tell us, how have you been doing?
I've been doing pretty good, actually. Things change, which, you know, I started out sort of thinking I was very positive and very kind of sort of felt everything would be over very quickly. Well, you know, that didn't happen. And then I started getting involved in doing stuff, doing some Zoom stuff and doing like happy hour on house party, which was great because I don't like being around cigarette smokes. I didn't have that issue anymore. So it was lots of great things have come out of it, actually. That my house has never been cleaner. Everything that is nailed down has been painted, which is kind of interesting too. So it's all been great. We have a hardware store very close by, and I think I go there now almost every day and as part of my walk. And I always find something to bring back and knock away at or chip away at or change. I've kept myself pretty busy. And also, I did a little show with Finola, which has been great fun. We had a great time doing that.
Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with it, and we're definitely going to get into it a little later. First, though, there's just so many amazing things career-wise that we cannot wait to get your take on. Starting even before you began in daytime, you were a very successful model when you were like first breaking into acting. You were Mr. Walkman for Sony's campaign, to name just yes. One exciting accomplishment. So how would you like sum up the years in your life when you went from working in restaurants to what I imagine was a pretty big lifestyle change when you were discovered as a model and began working in that industry?
A state of shock, mostly. I think, the interesting thing about this last period has been a lot of time to reflect on just things that happened so quickly that I never really took into account how I felt about it, or, you know, it was just moving so fast and moving forward, and every day was either a different city or a definitely different cast of characters and or even a different language that I probably, you know, mostly never understood. So it was always just being like, being a moving target and being sort of like trying to keep this light little balloon up in the air and so it didn't come crashing down to the ground. So I never really took my feelings into I could never recognize how I felt about it. But recently I have, and I've sort of written a lot of stuff down and been sort of just contemplating just the days and just how extraordinary actually it was, and that it was pretty remarkable. And I there's no way I could ever have, if I go back 45 years, there's no way I could ever have dreamt or imagined where my life would go, where it would, what it would become, or where it would be, or where I would be, or so. Yeah, I mean, I do remember days very clearly. I do remember being kind of like, and I, you know, obviously not paralyzed with shock, but just having to do it, go through it. Even, you know, right up to my first day being on a TV set, and, you know, having no preparation for that apart from I'd done commercials and been on movie sets, but not like acting and not like, you know, speaking and not interacting. So, I mean, I don't know. I feel sort of like sometimes I feel I probably got slapped a lot all along the way, but other times I feel like I just, you know, it just has been a very interesting ride, and for the most part, gentle and kind, which has been very nice. I'm definitely aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that you were Giorgio Armani's personal fitting model?
Well, I don't. Personal fitting model sounds like he would try his own clothes on me first, which which was not the case. But I happened to be the size that he liked to make clothes for. So yeah, he would. It's interesting. I got to do some photographic stuff for Armani, but I never got to do the runway because then, you know, they always had these, you know, 6 feet two people, and I was not that, but I was the sample size. So yeah, I would go to Milan several days out of the year just for fitting, and yeah, that was sort of interesting. I think I was also like Yoji Yamamoto's like favorite model for a little while, and Matsuda and Issey Miyake and a lot of the Japanese designers, and that was kind of just as interesting for me because I love that aesthetic.
Very cool. Now, in 1986, you were tapped to play Duke Lavery on GH, which kicked off your daytime career. Now, you and Finola Hughes remember your first meeting very differently, but tell us your version and your casting story in general.
The casting story was, so I now, when I think about it, I was doing a work in progress, they called it, I believe, at the Actors Studio, and they allowed people to come see it, which was unusual. And a couple of agents came, and somebody from ABC was there, and they, for some reason, like I was doing, it was Jean Genet's The Maids. There were three of us, three guys, and we were like in half drag, which is, you know, kind of, it was around the time of Kiss of the Spider Woman. So it was, you know, the t-shirts on the head and all that stuff. And somebody from ABC came, and my agent got a call asking if I would go in and meet them just generally. So I did. And they said they'd like to put me on tape. And there was something, somebody was looking to cast on the West Coast. And I was like, yeah, what? And they said it was a soap opera. And I said, I have no idea what that is. And they said, well, it's called General Hospital. It's a big show. I said, okay. So they put me on tape, and the tape, I guess, was sent by courier in those days, you know, like a big envelope on an airplane. And Gloria Monty obviously saw the tape, and then they flew me out. So I came out to California, and I was staying at a very nice hotel, and Carr picked me up in the morning and took me to the studio. And I have no idea like what I was thinking. Actually, first of all, I didn't like LA. And secondly, I had looked at, you know, I'd been told that you'll be testing with Finola Hughes, and I'd been in whatever the supermarkets in New York had were back then, I can't remember, but they had Soap Opera Digest and all the other magazines at the time. There were lots of them, I remember. And they were all at the newsstand, and I looked at it, and I looked at her, and I thought, wow, well, I'm going to meet her. And I said to my friends, this is the girl I'm supposed to meet in New York, in LA next week. And I said, maybe I should watch the show and get some sense of like what this is about, because I have no clue. So the following day, I put on General Hospital, and there pops up Anna Devane Finola, and she's sitting in a train, and she's got a scar on her face, and the train's moving, and the only way you could tell is somebody was running past with trees. You could see, you know, they're running past the window with two trees every now and again, so the train was moving. And I thought, this is not, I'm not so sure this is something that I want to get involved in. This is like, doesn't, I don't know. I'm kind of like, what is this? So I came out to California. I went to the studio, and I think the first person I met was Gloria's secretary, who took me to the makeup room to meet Fanola. Fanola was gorgeous, and she was bubbly, and she was very enthusiastic. I kind of was not bubbly or enthusiastic. And the nicest thing I can say about the way I was I was being very Scottish, very, very cautious and very kind of wary, and was, you know, I was being pretty earnest, because otherwise I would probably have been sort of almost hysterical at this point. And they put me in a little dressing room, and there were clothes there that, you know, lo and behold, like fit me. And she came to the dressing room, Fanola, and wanted to run lines. And I was like, yeah, sure. But, you know, I know them already. And she was like, oh, okay, like, well, I have to learn them. I said, well, all right, we'll learn them. So we ran the lines, and I'm not quite sure if we had connected. Got called to the set, and we kind of shot the test, and I left and was running because I couldn't wait to get in the car, couldn't wait to get back to the hotel, couldn't wait to get back to New York, couldn't wait. And suddenly behind me comes Fanola running. She goes, oh my God, that was terrific. That was so terrific. And I turned and I said, what? And she said, the test, it was terrific. I said, really? Really? Why? Well, it just was great. You don't think so? I said, no, I don't think so. So that is my side of the story. But I think my side is now similar to her side, because I only heard her side recently, I believe.
Well, obviously she was on to something, because you and Fanola became fast friends.
Yes.
As Duke and Anna quickly rose to super couple status.
Right.
So when you look back now, what does stand out to you about the magic of that first 4-year run that you had?
I think I can say this for myself. I think I had a life in New York, and I had... I had an interesting life, but it was definitely time for a change. And I think I found the best person I could possibly find to kind of usher me into the next phase of my life. And I think really that's what that was about. So from the moment we actually started working, we were just fast and furious friends. It was kind of extraordinary. It was a great friendship, great relationship. And it's been that way. She it was very funny, because we kind of last summer, when Dylan was coming down to the town, to LA, to do he got an internship at my friend's media marketing company. And Fanola dropped him off with his, you know, suitcase, and a little bag of, you know, staples, like, you know, for some food and stuff. And I looked at her and I thought, oh my God, who would have thought 1986 that at this point in 2019, you'd be dropping off your 18-year-old son for me to take care of for 2 weeks. I mean, and we just kind of, you know, obviously just shook our heads. And we're like, well, there you go. You never know.
You never know.
Nope.
And for the record, she says you are amazing with her children.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I'm very, you know, I love her children. You know, I don't like, I'm kind of very, I engage with kids, but I like them to be as adult as they possibly can be. I don't like, you know, crying, whiny children. So I don't indulge that. So.
That's funny. Now, during your first GH run, you also appeared in the, I believe, underrated sitcom, It's Gary's Shandling Show. Mm-hmm. And you later worked with Gary again on the Larry Sanders Show.
Right.
Now, tell me the story of how the two of you met.
I think it's now become known as the original parking lot story. we were on the same lot. We were on at Sunset Gower, which was the old Columbia lot. And Days of Our Lives was there also at the time. And Marriage with Children, and I think Who's the Boss? It was one of the busiest lots in town. And there was always something happening, people, you know, running around. And I was walking through the parking lot with Shel Kepler, of all people, who played Amy Vining. And Shel got all excited, and she said, oh my God, it's Gary Shandling. And I said, who is that? She said, he's a comedian. He's got a show. I said, okay, well. So she Gary. And Gary said, hi, like, you know, kind of looking at her like a little questioningly. And I said, hi. And he said, oh, are you an actor? I said, yeah, I am. Well, yeah, I'm an actor. He said, are you funny? I said, I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know. I could be funny. He goes, would you come and read something with us tomorrow? And I said, sure. So I did. The next day, I went to a table read. And there was a character called Ian, which was great, which was easy.
Easy.
Yes, one thing less to remember. And I read and it started immediately. So I was there. I worked with him on that show, I believe, even after I was gone from General Hospital and I went back to work in England. They brought me back, I think, for their last season of the show, or last two seasons of the show. So.
Well, that leads to my next question, which is, why did you leave GH?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think I was with a management company and also with agents who I think had bigger plans for me than I had for myself, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they kind of were sort of molding me and pushing me towards sort of bigger, what they considered to be bigger, better things. And I didn't particularly feel that way. I sort of was still kind of learning, like whatever. And also I got to, you know, guest on certain other things at the same time. So I felt I was doing, you know, fine. I was doing, you know, moving along at a fairly good pace, but they wanted to kind of push me into probably having a primetime series of my own. And I think that was part of a negotiation that didn't go terribly well. And then things were done for the time. And then I think there was an attempt to bring them back together. And I think by then I started doing a lot of primetime Columbo, and Universal had offered me like a choice of things. And you know, I then went on to Twin Peaks like immediately. So I think by then I was mostly on their track, but I had loved the format of daytime and I loved the pace. I realized very quickly, I do not like sitting alone in a trailer. It's the loneliest place in the world. And this is before we had cell phones or any way to keep in contact with the outside world. And all you could do was sit there and wait for somebody to come knock on the door and say, 5 minutes. And you'd never know when that would happen. And I hated it. I just couldn't stand any part of that. So I loved the ensemble of daytime. I loved being around a group, you know, group of people that I loved and working with and creating. And, you know, I realized pretty quickly that unlike other people, I'm only creative when I'm comfortable. I'm not creative when I'm panic-stricken and horror-struck or terrified or any of those other things. It's all, I have to be completely comfortable, and then I'm totally wide open. So I don't know if that answers the question, but there you are.
No, it's
asked and answered. Yes.
It absolutely does. Well, we have to ask more about your time on the cult hit Twin Peaks, where you played Dick Tremaine,
yes,
one of my all-time favorites. What stands out to you about working with David Lynch and filming that show?
A lot of things stand out. He particularly still like stands out. I see him socially, or did see him socially when we had such a thing. I don't even see him at a distance anymore, but I had a very interesting relationship with him. He only ever calls me by character names. The first time I worked with him, I did the Calvin Klein Obsession campaign with Lara Flynn Boyle. And that's when he sort of asked if I wanted to be played a dick. And I said, sure. Like, you know, again, I had not seen Twin Peaks, but I went in to meet them the following week and then started on Twin Peaks. It was great. I loved it from the second it's interesting because I don't think that, you know, I was working with Kimmy Robertson and Harry Goers and you know, a bunch of just, you know, Colin McLaughlin and other, the wonderful girls. And I don't think we were doing a little soap opera, the three of us, like, you know, Harry and Kimmy, Andy and Lucy and Dick, mm-hmm, were doing a little soap opera triangle, which I thought was kind of funny, and they didn't recognize it as such because they'd never done that. And that's all I basically had done. So mm-hmm, I was kind of, I was very tickled by that. But I loved the people I got to meet. I got to work with some, you know, the guest directors were just extraordinary. They've gone on to be people that are have been a part of my life, part of my career. It was great. It was a wonderful experience all around. I just loved everything. I mean, I love his take on things. He changed, altered the way that I see things. And you know, I went on to do On the Air with him also, which some people call one of the biggest flops on American television. But I never saw it that way because I'd never been happier, and I loved Miguel Ferrer, and I loved Nancy Ferguson, and I loved, like, we just had so much fun. And it was on the lot where we worked, they had, you know, Evening Shade and Roseanne. We had a totally closed set because David didn't want the network seeing anything we were doing for very obvious reasons. And, you know, every now and again, there'd be somebody would come, like, trying to get on the set. I remember Miguel saying, can you come and say hello to my cousin? You know, he's on a show over here, but he's crazy about show business, and David won't let him on the set, but he'd love to say hello. And I said, sure. So I went out and said hello to George Clooney, who had, you know, was, and I, he was lovely. He was very excited to meet me and everything else. And I haven't seen him since, but the only, like, big celebrities were allowed to come on the set and watch the taping of the live segment of the Lester Guy show. So that was always exciting, you know, Rosemary Clooney. It was a great time. I loved it. I could not believe that it wasn't going to be my entire adult life like that show. Because we traveled all over the world promoting it, went to Rome and Tokyo, and then it was gone very quickly. So.
Well, after that, you eventually made your way to Bold and Beautiful in 1993, where you played the virginal psychiatrist, James Warwick.
Yes.
So, first of all, you know, what was your reaction to hearing that's who you're playing? And tell us about your Bold and Beautiful experience.
Well, that's not how the character was presented. He was presented as this kind of sort of mysterious, but highly respected, the mentor.
Virgin?
No, I don't even think that came up until it did. Yeah. Until we were in the cabin after the earthquake and the blizzard I think I read it. I don't think anybody told me. I think I actually read it and I was like, seriously? It's kind of like, is this seriously, like, for real? Like, yeah. And there happened to be, I think, at the time, like, a major athlete had also, at the age of 30, said, you know, he was a virgin because he was saving himself for marriage. So I think that's where the idea came from. But it was, I mean, there was lots of, like, a lot of uncomfortable kind of giggling until Hunter and I kind of committed. We were like, you know, she's very good. Like, she, you know, is very serious when she gets down to it. So I always thought it was kind of, even if it wasn't the truth, like, even, I don't think James really lied, although he did some very odd things. Even if it wasn't the truth, you can only get away with it once. So I thought that, I thought it was kind of, it was an extraordinary choice, but like everything else on that show, that was a great experience for me, that show. I loved it. I loved the format. I loved the class. I loved the style. I loved everything about it. So,
and yeah. Is that where you met Susan Flannery, who played Stephanie and is a good friend?
Yes, that is where I met Susan Flannery. Yes, that's where we met.
So thank you, B&B, for that too.
Well, yeah, it seems like, you know, and it seems like every show that I've done, I've picked up at least one great friend. So, I mean, I'm very grateful for that. So. You know, I have Rebecca from All My Children, of
course.
Right. Although I think we met doing, what was the show, Kelly, the comedy show?
Port Charles.
No, the show Kelly Ripa did, the comedy.
Hope and Faith.
Hope and Faith. I think that's where Rebecca and I first met, actually, on Hope and Faith.
Huh. Well, I don't know if you have a friend from your next daytime home, but it was Port Charles where you played Vampire King Joshua Temple. So you worked with a lot of people who are well-known to GH fans, Michael Easton, Kelly Monaco, John Lindstrom. So what stands out to you about your Port Charles run?
A lot of fun, a lot of sort of, I think it was really obviously like ahead of its time. With it was way just, you know, ahead of all the vampire stuff, Twilight, whatever. But it was kind of cool. I think, you know, it was a little odd to be playing the underbelly of Port Charles when, you know, I was a little wary, I think, of that initially. But then once we got into it, and you know, I was working with Rebecca Stab, who I had done Columbo with many years before, and she and I were very close. And all the kids, Kelly Monaco, who was a kid at the time, I just adored. And everybody else, I loved. You know, Lynn Herring was you know, has always been like you know, she and I started, I think, probably almost at the same time on General Hospital. Mm-hmm. I think she was there 84 or 5, I believe. So always, you know, it was great. It was like, and also it was on the same lot. So it was sort of definitely close to going home, but not quite. But I had a very good time, and the pace of the work was extraordinary because I love working like that. I don't like standing still once I start. So it was nice to, and also, you know, at 10 to 5, they'd say, come on, you've got three scenes and we can't go beyond 5 o'clock. So you just basically then do exactly what you wanted. And that was the most fun in the world. So,
well, you followed up Poor Charles with a 2005 to 2006 run playing what I have to say is one of the most bizarre characters ever on All My Children, even possibly topping a vampire and a virginal psychiatrist. We had Gregory Madden, the OBGYN, who not only stole the embryo that Susan Lucci's Erica was meant to have aborted back in the early 70s, rather, and raised her son as his own, but also had a private island where he'd lured pregnant women. And ultimately, of course, was buried alive and died at the hands of Tad Martin. So certainly never a dull moment for you, Ian. What comes to mind when you think about the time that you spent in Pine Valley?
Well, I think the best part was spending time in New York, actually. But my Pine Valley experience was, I was totally oblivious to how controversial the unabortionist would be. I think when Julie Carruthers was explaining it to me, all I could hear was like, you know, I'll take Manhattan. Yay! I don't think I heard fetus. I don't think I heard any of that. So the whole thing unfolded. It was pretty, I gotta say, it was a very dramatic year for lots of reasons. There were a lot of things going on. I think, you know, the whole genre was changing also. I felt pretty fortunate to have another daytime gig. I do remember be careful what you wish for, or don't reveal your fears, especially around a soap opera writer, because that's, you know, lo and behold, it will be. I do remember telling Megan McTavish that my greatest fear was being buried alive. So,
oh no!
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay,
the only good thing about that was I got to go to work at 5 o'clock at night. Nobody else was there. It was just me and the crew and a big tank full of water and mud that I had to climb into, and I'd just, you know, be in there for 2 hours and then have to be lifted out because I couldn't move with the weight of the water and the mud and the clothes, and put in the shower, and then I'd go home and rinse off, repeat the next day, and that was my life for a couple of weeks until I think I crawled out of the ground at one point, which was I do think it wasn't just the audience taking that storyline seriously and wanting kind of revenge. I think there was a lot of characters and a lot of cast and crew, I think, really wanted Greg Madden dead.
Well, all I remember is how much you made Rebecca Budig laugh, she would tell me, by hiding your script between her legs when you were examining her character.
Yes. Well, that's when I was playing the gynecologist, and they'd throw all of these like medical terms, which I could not, I think I just was, you know, I'd be home the night before with the script and I'd look and I'd be, there's no way I can't, you know, I'd never been like that, but I just couldn't remember all of these medical like things. So Rebecca, very sweetly, as you know, I was doing her vaginal sonogram, very sweetly would have my dialogue like pasted to her underwear. So I could
helpful.
Yeah, very helpful. So I could basically read her gynecological condition straight off the not off the page, but off the actual
off the panties.
It was right there. Yeah. It was right there. It was an enormous help. but I remember she got the giggles, and then they had to cut because I couldn't read because everything was shaking so much. But yes, we had a lot of fun.
Well, you did pop back into Bold and Beautiful several times, and then in 2012 you landed in Salem for 6 months as Days' Ian McAllister, another Ian name, mm-hmm. working with Sarah Brown as Madison and Lauren Coslow as Kate. What was that experience like?
That was, you know, it was again like a not a very popular character. I think he was not really kind of brought in to be loved by anybody. He was pretty despicable, but I had a great time playing him. I loved Sarah and I loved Lauren Coslow. It's funny because having been through like daytime at its grandest, at its greatest, every network has a different flavor and, you know, a different tone. And I had experienced, you know, ABC, of course, CBS, and then NBC to me was a very, very different tone because it wasn't a huge daytime community at that point. So, you know, I was so used to kind of the ABC, you know, East Coast family and ABC West Coast family, and the same with CBS, that NBC was very insular. It was very insular for me. As a show, it was very insular, and it was not the happiest 6 months of my life, I have to say. Although I loved Lauren and I loved Sarah Brown, but I liked all the stuff I got to do with Lauren, and particularly the stuff towards the end I thought was you know great fun to play with Madison, you know, Madison's death, and then
and the explosion. There was a lot of
I can do without those explosions. I just get like when I was like. Even the explosion at All My Children, I swear, I was like, I mean, I have stories about that. I have a very, like, you know, daytime special effects are not my forte, or not, I'm not a huge fan of them. So I have to say, I like drama, I like emotion. I don't like bangs. I don't like, you know, like things flying through the air that you don't expect. And, you know, I'd like to take the actors by surprise. And it's like, no, not me. Thank you.
No, thanks.
But you'll have to have it written into all further contracts. No more explosions.
I think my explosion days are probably way behind me.
Well, like moments after you left Days, I feel like you went back to GH. Now, for the first few months you were back, you were not playing Duke. You were playing Cesar Faison, wearing a high-tech Duke mask, trying to lure Anna into bed. And you were also doing nefarious things like shooting Jason and kicking him into the water and keeping Robin hostage. So what was that leg of your return to General Hospital like for you?
It was a great surprise. Also, initially, I was not wearing a Duke mask. That was a decision, I think, that was made a little into it. So Duke, I think, could, you know, do some heinous things and then not be held responsible for it. But I had fun, though. When I realized I was playing the dual thing, it was sort of, there was a lot of fun. I made a great preparation for, you know, being masks now, by the way. I could use that Duke mask. I could walk around in it. But yeah, it was great. I mean, I loved going back there. I loved being back there. But I liked when Duke was just, you know, the Duke that I knew, but also, you know, obviously much older. I liked that. I liked, you know, it could have been, obviously it could have been more, but I don't think it was really intended to be. It was for, you know, the anniversary of, I think, was it the 50th? I can't remember. I think it was
the 50th was, that was like right in the lead up to their 50th. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was the first time you'd worked with Tony Geary, who played Luke, and it seems like he became a good friend. Had you met him before your paths crossed at GH?
Yes, I had met him at several of the, you know, the daytime community has always been very supportive. So if somebody had another project, if they're doing a play or doing, you know, they maybe had made a movie or directed something, then, you know, people would all show up. So I'd met Tony at various things, various events. Then we worked together. We became sort of fast friends, which was great. We kind of worked in a very similar way. And we became friends. We're very close friends, which is kind of, it's interesting. You know, if we walk through Amsterdam together, there'll be, you know, every now and again, someone will go, "Oh my God, look,
it's Jude and Luke.
Oh my God. Oh my God." Like, yes, yes, we took the show on the road. Here we are.
Yeah. It's the Duke and Luke show.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would watch that for sure.
Me too.
So I think that, you know, a lot of Duke and Anna fans were really disappointed that their romance never really got the chance to shine the way that it did during your first run. And sadly, Duke ultimately died. You know, what are your thoughts on that when you think about it now?
You know, when I think about it, I think it was pretty unfortunate that they didn't give it like a chance, but you know, things change, like, you know, life changes. Also, I think they wanted to, you know, probably keep Anna's character a little fresher, you know, younger, and you know, they'd already made her a grandmother, and I think they wanted to back off on that. You know, I understood it. I think it was unfortunate. I think you know, it's very hard to recreate like unique relationships and unique bonds, and I, you know, I think it's difficult. And I think when people make magic, then magic is something that you should just continue to shine. I don't think you break it down or do anything with it. I think you just recognize it and hold it dear. And you know, I think I got to do that for as long as I participated, and you know, the rest is up to other people. And you know, I always fulfill my part and everything. So I got to die with my head on her lap, which was like a huge request because I hate dying with my head on concrete. And that's the one thing I did ask for. So I got that. And yeah.
And they didn't bury you alive. So you had that going for you.
I would not have been surprised if they tried that.
We also did get some more tangos. Did you ever think that that would become such a big part of their, you know, narrative, the Duke and Anna story?
I think other people knew before I did. I couldn't believe it. I think the first time it was great. Gloria Monty was a great fan of tango. She employed like people to come teach us. She took us to see Tango Argentina. I went to a club called Helena's on a Tuesday night with Robert Duvall and Sheena Easton and other people to learn tango. And then we did the tango on the show. And I thought, well, good. I never have to tango again for the rest of my life. Hello.
Did it come right back to you?
No. because also with the reappearance of the tango, it coincided with my first aches and pains and back problems. So I was like often at Cedars getting a shot in the morning before we shot a tango at the studio during the day. So that was it was great. Great fun. Finola is so extraordinary and so incredibly patient because I have an extraordinary memory, but I don't have muscle memory. So I don't like the way a dancer does, you know, a dancer can, and I know tons of dancers and they can look at choreography once and they could be given choreography once and they just have this muscle memory where they just know it. And I kind of overthink it, I believe. So it was never easy, but it was ultimately great fun. And always they made it look so good. So, you know, and I have Finola to thank for that. And also all the great choreographers along the way. who were so excited to work with her and then realized they had to deal with me. And even we had, we rehearsed a tango and Val Chernofsky from Dancing with the Stars was there for the nurses' ball, I think Dancing with Kelly, Monaco probably. And he watched the rehearsal and he took Fanola aside and said to Fanola, like, if you want, I can work with you guys. I overheard this and I said, absolutely not. You keep your hands off our tango. We'll do this on our own. Thank you. And all of that. And all of that. But it would be a great opportunity. I said, for you, not for me. Not for me at all.
That's incredible.
Yes, yes. We that was our tangle during the tango.
So you and Fanola did reunite creatively, albeit in a very different context recently during the coronavirus lockdown. And the results are this extremely intriguing and cool thriller that can be found on IGTV called Enter Exit, where you play a retired agent named Hugo opposite Fanola's retired agent, Hannah, and you get drawn into a mystery involving an old enemy and a teenage girl played by Brooklyn Rae Seltzer, who was GH's Emma. So how did this project come about?
Our friend Matt Bourne, who we've known since he was like 13, 12, 13, his mother used to drop him off at Fanola, and we had a fan club lunch at a place called La Manganette, I believe, in New York. And his mother would drop him off because he was a huge Duke and Anna fan. So he'd sit in the front, and his feet didn't touch the floor. He'd just sit there swinging his legs. And he'd always ask these extraordinary questions. Fast forward to several years, he came out here to live in California. We all became friends. And he and Fanola have worked together on some things, and I've never worked with him, although I've read everything and seen everything he's ever done. And they had talked about maybe doing something for the three of us. And that's how it came about. I was a little trepidatious, I got to say. I don't believe I'd even done Zoom. I hadn't done Cameo. I hadn't done anything. So I never self-taped. So the idea of sitting at home, recording myself, talking to myself was the last thing in the world I really wanted to do. And Fanola, of course, said, well, I don't want to do it. I don't know how to do it, but we'll do it. We'll learn it. And I said, well, how? How can we learn it? And she said, well, our Chris Cazor, who's our editor and also director, will be on, you know, he'll be on Zoom with us, and we'll use our phones and our iPads, and sometimes we'll use our computers, and we'll just, you know, record, and then he'll cut it all together. So that's basically how it came about. And even the first couple of episodes, I was like, still, I called her and I said, like, I'm a little, I don't know, I'm not so sure. Like, it's just, I don't know how this is going to work. Well, I, of course, had no concept of what wonderful editing could do, and even a little special effects in that format, and also the great music, which has been, you know, original music written by somebody who we've known since birth, Cesar. And it's just extraordinary. I just think it's wonderful. And, you know, Brooklyn is just amazing. And there are lots of surprises coming up, although it's just been interesting. I kind of look at it in amazement, actually. I kind of look at it and think, well, I, like, there yet again at this point in my life, all preconceived notions have gone, you know, out, if not the window, definitely, like, just out there. Like, you know, first of all, I never thought I looked like that because I'd never been shot from any of those angles. But of course it was, you know, lights, me, camera, me, action, me, totally responsible for all of it. So I have nobody to blame. And so there you go. That's it. But we love it. There may be more. I'm not sure yet. We'll see.
Well, I have like been hanging on every installment personally. And when I talked to Fanola about it, she told me that Brooklyn just put you guys to shame when it came to the technical aspects of this.
Yeah. It was so funny because we had, we were shooting the first episode. We got it down to pretty quickly, like, you know, but the first day was a little clunky, and Fanola and I were still shooting our stuff. And I said, well, hang on a second, what is that? And it was a notification on my computer, Brooklyn downloading all of her stuff, already downloading it while we were still shooting. she was sending it off to the edit bank, or where we were storing it, Dropbox or whatever. Like while we were still trying to get our, I was like, yeah, this is not going to go well. But we learned. She actually talked us through stuff, and it was kind of interesting. And also Chris Kazor, he was very patient, and people who understand these things, as you obviously do, people who understand these things are it's extraordinary. You either understand it or else you just try to muddle through. So,
well, I absolutely love you in this project. I thought to myself the first time we met Hugo, I thought no one does disinterested like Ian Buchanan.
Yeah, it's true. Well, you know, but that's kind of, you know, that's always been sort of our relationship, not our professional relationship, but our personal relationship is Finola talking me into things. So that's the given always. So that's kind of other friends of ours who saw it right off the bat were like, oh my God, it's like watching you two at home, like just, you know, it's like in your separate homes, but like just the way you behave. It's like, I was like, well, that's kind of, I think there was that intimacy that being at home alone that I realized that would be a great, I understood instinctively that would be a great thing to share with an audience. Just, you know, like as if you're listening into this very private kind of relationship and with, you know, lots of history and lots of nuance and kind of, you know, just lots of very layered. So,
well,
it's been great.
Yeah. It's a really fun, cool show. And I highly recommend everyone heading to Instagram to check it out.
Well, it's been 34 years since you first set foot into Port Charles. Can you put into words what your career in daytime has meant to you personally and professionally?
I was, you know, definitely from the very beginning, I had no, I never would have dreamt that daytime would have been my life. I never would have dreamt television would have been my life. So it's been a great, I've seen it change, which is, of course, life is changing now, like just so dramatically or drastically, mm-hmm. that I've seen the whole genre change, but I will always hold very dear, like, you know, Radio City Music Hall, Emmy Night or Emmy Week or just the great sense of community it's been extraordinary. And also I the enormous talent and the great support, and especially the support that I experienced, not having a clue what I was doing, like never had seen four cameras in my entire life, never, you know, and people being very patient, very nurturing, and allowing me to become a pretty unique sort of talent in that whole format or in that milieu. That is what I hold like very dearly from the experience. And also, you know, what I'd like to bring into anything I do, like working with younger people, doing YA right now, which we're getting back to doing with very, very young actors. It's like, it's sort of important for me to remember like how I was as a young actor, how I was sort of treated and supported and not looked down upon. So I like getting old on daytime. I mean, it's not the best place in the world to get old, but it's kind of nice to get older and become one of the more mature of the group. It's very, very nice to survive it and just get there. It's you know, be a seasoned, as they say. I think they say seasoned.
Or right.
As Brooklyn when she was very young, we were doing at a party, I think probably for the Emmys or something. She was there and somebody asked her a question and she said, how do you like working with Mr. Buchanan? And she said, oh, he's wonderful. He's from the olden days. So I was kind of like, oh, okay. So her mother bent down and whispered in her ear and she goes, oh, the golden days. Which was kind of extraordinary. It sort of summed the whole thing up.
I love it. Well, Ian, as someone who had, you know, Duke and Anna pictures on my wall, I am certainly glad that you entered the daytime milieu, as you said. And it was so great to hear your voice and to get to catch up today.
It's always great catching up with you. And I hopefully we'll get to see you again when we get our world back or our lives back.
I know. I am hopeful. I am definitely hopeful.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us today, Ian. It was so great. Stay well and talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Stay well and stay safe and stay healthy, most of all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Ian Buchanan for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.